Accession number 7396, rule number 8.
Colonel Hancock, reel 8. Could you give me your impressions of the Anzac troops, Colonel Hancock?
Well, yes. My first reaction, of course, is of tremendous admiration for both the Australians and the New Zealanders. There's no doubt about it. They were magnificent fighters. They were very, very brave. They were tough, and they could physically endure the conditions, I should think, far better than we could, the English troops. But the Australian, we took over Hill 60 trenches from the Australians, and I think there were also a few New Zealanders there at the same time. And they were holding the line very lightly, waiting for us to come up and relieve them, which we did. The Australian fighter was an individualist. He would go off and fight his own battle in his own way, and he didn't take very kindly to discipline. In fact, I think it may have, because of that, I think there were, could have been, unnecessary casualties for that reason. They would not, I wouldn't say wouldn't do as they were told, but they didn't take kindly to being told to do anything. They liked to do it on their own. Well, that was fine. And he's a very tough person altogether. Now, the New Zealanders, they were, we thought, equally brave, equally tough soldiers. But he had you could talk to a New Zealander almost as you would to English people, and you had but you didn't have the same rapport with the Australians, who were a rougher diamond, if you like. I remember one occasion, when we first went into those trenches, I remember we got into the trench, going up this hill 60, and just inside the trenches, the first little bit we went up, a lot of the parapet of that trench had been built up with dead bodies, covered earth with earth, and here and there you'd see bits sticking out, and one particular thing. Sounds awful, really. There was a hand sticking out, and it all dried, or completely dried. Probably been there a fortnight, 3 weeks. And I think I'm right in saying it was a New Zealander who said, as we went up there, he said, "Well, that chap, I've known him for some time, he must have been a dry old stick." It's awful to joke about it, but from that moment on, I think, every man as he went past shook hands. It seems almost macabre, but it actually happened. No, they're a marvellous fighting force.
Now, to have a look at the opposition, so to speak, the Turks. Firstly, I'd like to have your general impression of the Turks, and then if you could move on, you had another illustration of their their honourable behaviour. If you could first give your general impression to the Turk, how you felt of him as an opponent?
Well, we reckoned him a jolly tough fighter, and there's no doubt about it. Those troops that were opposite to us, I think, were their regular army. We were half holiday soldiers, really. I mean, we were a territorial battalion, and it was a very different kind of thing. They were probably hardened regular soldiers, and they were fighting for their land. We'd invaded them, and my God, they were not going to let us get away with it. That I think was a tremendous thing for the Turks, and a morale booster, and it made them damn good fighters. But at the same time, I think he had a reputation amongst us of fighting clean. He wouldn't resort to dirty tricks, I don't think he would have done. We never saw anything of it. In fact, I had that one illustration, I think I told you some time ago, when I had that one boy shot next to me, who, and we ought both have been shot dead, both of them. I'm quite sure we should have done. But the Turk said, oh, well, he knocked him out, let him get on with it. I feel that was their attitude then. And again, during the time we're on Hill 60, when I was just about to take over from the brigade bombing officer, we were walking along the front line trench when I heard, we both heard, what sounded like two shots from a machine gun. It went sort of tap, tap together. And almost immediately afterwards, I heard someone cry out just behind our front line trench, just about where that communication trench had been filled in with dead bodies. Well, we both, without thinking, I suppose it was a stupid thing to do, really, but without thinking, we both rushed up. It sloped up, that little communication, rushed up to see what had happened. Obviously, somebody had been hit. And there we found a corporal of the Essex Regiment had been shot in the side. And he was obviously very, very bad. So we got a ground sheet. I can't remember quite what happened. So I suppose one or other of us went down and got one, got a ground sheet, got it alongside and lifted him onto this ground sheet and carried him down. And I remember him saying how awful he was feeling. He said, oh, no, leave me here. Let me die. And I can hear him saying it now. He must have been in absolute agony. Anyway, we couldn't possibly leave him there. And we got held the ground sheets either end and got him down. Well, we didn't think about it at the time, but we both should have been shot dead. I'm quite certain the Turks, we were in the, we were obviously seen. If that chap had been seen, so were we. And I'm quite sure that the Turk behaved in a gentlemanly way, if you like. He said, well, they didn't know what the chap was up to. What he was doing, in fact, was collecting identity discs from all these dead bodies, which is a marvellous thing to do. The Turks didn't know what was happening. They wouldn't understand that probably if they did know. And they said, well, we'll shoot him, which they did. But having done that, then they saw he was wounded and there was somebody helping him. Oh, let him get on with it. That's how I feel I would have thought they would have they had behaved. And that, to my mind, was a clear illustration of their, I suppose, sportsmanship, if you like, or fighting fairly.
Just to put, is this in fact the incident you got the MC for?
Well, I wouldn't know, but I got recommended twice, I believe. So, for some reason or other, they got a few to spare. You better let him have one, you know.
Did you, I think from the sound of it, we've already had the answer to this, but did you at any time believe the atrocity stories about the Turks?
Oh, no. No.
And did you at any time?
In fact, I don't think we heard anything about it there. I don't think so. Mind you, in hot blood, you know, and you've got pretty well hand-to-hand fighting, anything can happen. That's another story, I think. But we never heard anything like the atrocities that the Germans were supposed to have done.
Yeah, and did you at any time hate the Turks as your enemy? What was your...
Oh, no. Old Johnny Turk. You know, we'd already referred to him as a Brother Turk or Johnny Turk, No, we hadn't the hatred. I'm sure we hadn't.
I'd now like to look at how your training had prepared you for trench warfare. Your training in England had prepared you for the conditions of warfare which you met at Gallipoli. And perhaps in your answer you could say what you think would have happened if you'd applied your training you'd received in England on how to commit an attack and how to behave in the face of the enemy. What do you think would have actually happened?
Well, we'd have been wiped out to a man, I think, if we tried to apply Boer War tactics in the face of that enemy, who were well entrenched, couldn't be seen, and if we tried to just carry out a frontal attack and trying to blast the enemy out of their position, we'd have been wiped out. No question about it. And of course we had no training of any kind in trench warfare. We looked upon a trench as a means of saving one's life. But we learnt how to cope in the trenches by experience, and we learnt as we went along. The rule one being keep your head down and don't let anybody see you ever. But we had no previous training in that.
How soon did it become apparent that your training was inadequate?
Oh. Well, I don't know.
Because earlier you said that at the time you were training, you believed that this was inadequate training and that you were, you know.
Well, it was
at
all.
At what point did it become apparent that it wasn't?
Well, we weren't in. You see, when we were undergoing training, we were in no position to know what we were supposed to be taught. We were told to do certain things, and that was our training, and we couldn't question it. We didn't know any better. We didn't know anything. It was our training, the best part of our training, was getting ourselves physically fit and able to do marches and to carry our kit and that sort of thing. But as far as actual tactics were concerned, we learnt damn little.
And when you couldn't put a time on when it became apparent that your tactics, infantry tactics, were inadequate?
Well, it was all so different to what we thought it would be. See, we hadn't. Difficult to know, really. I don't think we ever suddenly realised that we'd not really been taught anything of use, that we had to learn everything by bitter experience. I think it just became, as I say, a kind of question of surviving.
Right. Did you receive any news from home?
Oh, yes, but not until it was some time before we went up to Hill 60. It was some time around about the time when we were in those trenches, I think, on Salt Lake or Lalibaba, somewhere around there. We got a mail, which was, I suppose, about 3 weeks after we got there. And that was wonderful. We got copies of newspapers, and we got an idea of what had been going on, and so on and so forth. Well, one thing we read in the newspapers, which absolutely shattered us, was to read that the miners were on strike. I must say the reaction was, I can't describe it, because I've never, even in the army, I've never heard quite such language. It was a bit hard to read that, I must say, when we were none too comfortable, we'll say. I must say the reaction of almost everybody was a reference to impolite reference to the miner's parentage. We'll put it no further than that.
How often after this first delivery of mail and post, of mail and newspapers, did you receive communications from the UK?
Fairly regularly. I can't put a time. I wouldn't say we got one every week or something like that. Sometimes we used to go for a longish time, and then we'd get two lots perhaps almost together. It's a question of the shipping, you see, coming from England. I mean, it wasn't a question of airmail or anything like that. It all had to come up by ship.
Did you? What sort of things would you receive in your mail? Were the parcels?
Yes, we got parcels. We had written, you see, saying what the conditions were, how hot it was, what a pest the flies were, and we used to get people used to send us fly cream and stuff like that. The men got sent all kinds of things, mostly edible things, which of course were quite useless by the time we got there, and that sort of thing. Eventually, we did get from things sent out like chocolates, sweets, and those sort of things, which of course we didn't get, and we were very badly off for. I think they used to send cigarettes out to us, but we used to have occasionally an issue of cigarettes, and I remember two makes of cigarettes. They were the most extraordinary ones. They were some of them. I can only remember two. One was Park Drive, which I think became quite a well-known one afterwards, and another was a make of cigarette called Scissors. I never heard of that before or since, but we were very glad to have them. We used to smoke an awful lot.
What was the weather like during your service at Gallipoli?
The whole of the time I was there, which was, what, early August, sometime August up till the end of October, I don't think any moisture of any kind fell, whatever. The sun was always brilliant. It was almost a cloudless sky. And, of course, the change from dark to light, and in the evening from light to darkness, there was practically no twilight. It was very quick, because the sun went down so abruptly behind the horizon, below the horizon. Yes, it was very hot all the time.
Right. The next thing I'd like to ask is, towards the end of October, you were wounded. I'd like to tell me the background to how you were wounded.
Oh, yes. Well, this was at the end of October. Well, just for a few days before the end of October, the a battalion of the Norfolk Yeomanry were sent to occupy the trenches on our right, where, if you remember, the on the right of our line, the trenches went down a hill and then out towards Anzac. And the Norfolk Yeomanry had come from Egypt. They left all their yeomanry kit there, of course, and they came into the front line with us. Well, they had had no training, infantry training, I imagine, at all. And I don't think I'd ever seen a bomb, didn't know what to do with it. And I was told by my brigadier to go down to their frontline trench to make myself known to the officers there, collect some of them together, and give them some information as to how to cope with this bombing lark. So I did this. This was on a Sunday. 31st of October, that was Halloween. Anyway, I spent the morning with them, and then in the afternoon, I spent the morning showing them how to cope with the hand bombs and how to throw them, how to put new fuses into them, generally so they can carry on. And then in the afternoon, they got issued to them a thing which was a rather a crude sort of contraption on the lines of a trench mortar, if you know what I mean. But it was a wooden contraption and meant to work on the principle of a catapult. Now, there was a wooden cylinder, hollow cylinder, on a framework, which on either side had a strong elastic tape. You primed or cocked the thing, if you like, by winding a handle. You pulled back the cylinder down until there's a pretty good tension on the rubber. You then fixed a catch, and you were ready to start. You then got your bomb, whatever kind of bomb you're going to use, lit the end of it, and dropped it in the cylinder, and then released the catch, and whoosh, up she went. Well, it was a bit of literally cockshy, because you've got very little idea. I mean, there was no question of seeing where it went. You daren't pop over the trench to see whether it fell where you wanted it to. It was just a question of guessing at what angle you set the thing, high or low. No use setting in a very flat trajectory, because it wouldn't have gone into a trench. And that was the only place where it was going to be effective. So they had to be cocked up pretty high, and you had to work the tension of the rubber so that it didn't go too far. It's a very hit-and-miss affair. Anyway, we've been going at this for some little time. It was rather quite fun, really. I did one or two, and then I got them to do it, and I reckon they were on their, they were doing it on their own. They knew how to carry on. When suddenly, our old friend, the enfilading gun, it started up. Well, we had three or four rounds of this fairly wide of where we were, and we could hear the thing coming. And we had about three, I think, and then there was one that sounded as if it somehow was pretty close. So we all crouched down, trying to get a bit of cover, and I was down on one knee and leg up behind me, and this damn thing burst just in the ideal position, I suppose, from the Turks' point of view. A burst of these shrapnel bullets came down, and one went through my leg, smashing to below the knee. Anyway, I didn't know that's what had happened. It felt as if there was a rock had been dislodged or something and dropped on the back of my calf. That's what it felt like. So anyway, I tried to get up. I got promptly fell over. I thought, oh God, I must have been hit. I didn't realize until that moment. Anyway, I sat down and I unwound the putty off him to have a look to see what it was. And it was, I'm going to say, disappointingly small. I felt, well, if I'm going to be wounded, let's have something to show for it. But it had gone in one side, my outside of my right leg, and it came out on the inside, went right through and took the bone with it, or smashed it. So that was that. Anyway, I couldn't feel very much. It seemed a very ordinary sort of thing somehow. I don't know. Anyway, they sent for stretcher-bearer. Obviously couldn't stand or doing. They got a stretcher-bearer up to me. Two chaps came up with a thing, with a sheet slung between two poles, because the trenches were so narrow there, we couldn't get round with a ordinary stretcher. So I sat on this thing with my legs dangling in front of me, and the chap fore and aft, and we got down to the advanced dressing station. By the time I got down there, it was feeling a bit uncomfortable and began to ache, and I knew something about it. Anyway, a doctor, I don't know, they lifted me off the thing somehow or other, laid me on a stretcher, an ordinary stretcher, and he had a look, and looked to see whether there's anything broken. Because he decided there was, he put on a very, very tight bandage, and that, for a moment, sort of gave me a little kind of some sort of stability. Anyway, he said, "Oh, well, you better go down to the dressing station down at Anzac." So off I was carted down there, and I just was seen by the doctor. I suppose the advanced dressing station probably sent a note down with me to the chap down below, and I was put in a long tent with a lot of other chaps who were wounded on the stretcher. And I was able then, still, wasn't too bad. My leg was tiresome, but it wasn't too bad. I wrote a note to my adjutant to tell him what had happened, and I asked for my kit to be sent down by a servant. And it was sent off, and that evening I got... my servant came down with all my kit. Well, that was on Sunday night. I stayed on the stretcher Sunday night, all Monday night. Tuesday morning, I was told, you'll have to go to Alexandra. Well, I wasn't very sorry about that. And so, I was carried down to a little jetty. This is Anzac Cove. To a little jetty, and from there I was winched up on a crane, still on the stretcher, onto the deck of the little merchant ship which was fitted out as a hospital ship called the Navassa, which I'd never forget. And I must say, it was jolly nice to feel that I'd at last got off that awful peninsula. And straight away, I got into a bed. I must say, the idea of having sheets and a bed was bliss. So that I felt at last I'd just got...